So we're a few days past the halfway point in what's called our rains retreat, the Vasa period, the time when monks in the monastery determined to stay in the monastery for about a three-month period with minimal coming and going. And recently, in the last week, there's been a theme in the morning reflections around body contemplation and impermanence and a sense. Thanrakito talked this morning about a sense of, you know, how we're often seeking sensual pleasure, satisfaction, and when we come to the practice, we start to engage in ways where we're letting go of that, and we're seeing how our minds deal with not always kind of chasing after things and trying to get something and seeking that kind of sensual satisfaction. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that unpopular worldly subject. I remember hearing about a monk who, it might have been an Anagarika, Samanera, someone very new to the training. Had his parents visiting in one of the Australian monasteries. And he was very exuberant about the practice and excited about all things. And his parents were, you know, weren't Buddhist and didn't really know much about it. And so he asked some of the monks if he could visit their kutis and show them, you know, their huts and show them just the parents around the monastery. And they said yes. And so they came to... I'm not going to get all of the facts around the story right, but they came to one of the huts, one of the kutis, and he went inside, and there was a skull, and the parents were a bit shocked by this, and he kind of was trying to explain it to them, but they were a bit concerned. Why does a monk have a skull in their hut? This seemed a bit... strange and morbid, and they said, "Okay, well, don't worry about it. We'll, you know, go to the next kuti," and they see these photos of rotting human corpses, and his parents are getting more and more concerned, and he's fumbling through trying to explain this to them, and then the third kuti they come to, he's this monk has dragged the corpse of a kangaroo, and it's surrounded by candles and waxes, you know, has dripped all over and rotting kangaroo corpse. So the parents were very concerned about their child and probably had to talk to the abbot to try to understand what was going on. And to us, the monks hearing about this, it might seem a bit funny and just not really a big deal, but for those who are new to Buddhism or haven't really thought about their own death or their own bodies, this can be sort of a shocking or disturbing or surprising phenomena, or, you know, just a sense of like, why would anybody want to think about those things or picture them or imagine them or bring them to mind? And as I started the talk, I said it's an unpopular worldly subject. So, you know, here we have some of us will be practicing some of these things, and I remember myself having an experience with fumbling through this as an Anagarika when I had a friend visit and. A couple of friends, and my friend had recently gotten married, and I told him, you know, like, well, you know, if you really want to get to the core of the Buddha's teachings, you really want to focus on this Asubha Kamatana and just imagine your wife's liver and, you know, contemplate that, you know, what is that like, you know, what is that? he kind of shook his head and he said, I don't really want to contemplate that, actually. That was the last I saw him, actually. So, you win some, you lose some. And that's kind of the, of course, I was too exuberant, and that was the wrong teaching. It's sort of like that sort of thing Lumbar Cha teaches. It's true but not right, and right but not true. So it's like, yeah, it's true. That's the Buddha's teachings. These are things that he thought of as a meditation technique, but that's probably not the right thing to be teaching at a particular time to a person. It all depends on what's helpful for them. So I'm sure if this monk in Australia or myself had, or Anagarika, whatever it was, had started with like the gradual teachings or taught about how important generosity was, or kindness, or morality, or calm and peace, mindfulness, these are things that maybe are a good approach. But I'm not going to teach about that tonight. So this is coming up a bit because we are also going on a Asubha trip. Asubha means unbeautiful in Pali. So Asubha is beautiful and Asubha is unbeautiful. And the Buddha really encourages this contemplation of the unbeautiful, the sense of not always seeing what we think we're seeing as beautiful and permanent and everlasting, and seeing a different side to that, using our wise attention to kind of check our minds to see if we're kind of fooling ourselves or being ignorant. So this Monday, we're going to go down to San Jose and look at what's called the Body Worlds exhibit. So what's traditionally done for monks is they will have times they can actually, to practice this Asubha contemplation, they can do something like stay in a cemetery or more like a place where bodies are burned. In Thailand, that's more traditional, burn a body. And so that's something that can actually be observed in Thailand. And there is a place in the Wat Phananachat, which is the monastery for non-Thais. So it's anyone who's not from Thailand, the monks can go there, then start there, or the laymen can start their practice there and see if they want to become monks. But in there is actually a place where bodies will be cremated, and so one can view that. Here we don't have that opportunity so much. It happens a little bit every now and again when somebody dies, and then we can actually be part of that in a crematorium in Ukiah. But it's a bit unusual to be able to be around a corpse or something like that. And what a corpse allows us to see is sort of the death, but also there's the changing nature of the body. And the other thing that monks can do in this modern age is see an autopsy in Thailand. But we can't do that here. It's not allowed, unfortunately. Or at least we don't have the connections to get in. So the Body Worlds exhibit in San Jose is there's a German man, a very interesting fellow, who learned how to plastinate bodies. And he's basically he's plastinated all kinds of parts of the body so that he can dissolve the rest and you can see the inside of the body. All kinds of interesting ways to see the skin off of the body, and whether it's muscles or the organs or veins, all of the parts of the body, nerves. And he did it in, he's kind of a worldly fellow a bit, so he did it in sort of entertaining ways. So they're like playing basketball, or they're skating, or they're playing chess, or on a computer. But in a way, that's like, okay, there's normal things, but these are real people. They're not just plastic made up parts. So they're people who donated their bodies, which is a helpful contemplation for us, for those of us who are going, to note that these are actual people who wanted to have their bodies plastinated and used in this way. So the question is, why would we want to really expose ourselves to that? And is there any use for, is this just a monk's occupation and monks and nuns do this? Or is this actually something that everyone could benefit from? And if you're listening now and you're kind of thinking, oh, God, I don't want to hear about this, then this talk is for you. So the sense that we have is often that we don't want to hear about the impermanence of our bodies, the fact that we are all headed to the grave, and we don't have knowledge of when that's going to occur. And most of us will have hope. We have hope that we're going to last a while. I don't know many people who are hoping, I mean, unless you're very old and maybe ready for it, but most people are not hoping to, I can't wait till I get cancer. That's not the usual train of thought. It's usually the opposite. I hope I don't get cancer. I hope I don't die early. I hope I don't die painfully, and on the mind can go. But mostly what it does is just pushes off this topic of death, sickness, or a sense of like what the body is, you know, really an examination of what the body is. And when we really try to understand why it's important to think about our bodies, to contemplate them, I mean, this is what the Buddha actually said is foundational to our practice, is body contemplation. Whether that's focusing on our breaths, our breathing, or focusing on how we experience walking or the four postures or the elements, or we're actually focusing on thinking about our body parts and different aspects of our body. Or even the Buddha had what's called corpse contemplation, where we actually imagine our corpse after we die changing form, going from all the way from, you know, just how we look now to then dust, but the gradual process through that. The reason that we do this and we focus on these and we contemplate them is because, as I've mentioned, we have a very usually unrealistic sense of our own bodies. And when we might look in the mirror, we want to see, we want to imagine there's not a change going on. If we do see change, a particular wrinkle or a mole, or we might see that there's some blemish on our skin, whatever it is, that's usually upsetting to us. Most people do not respond, nice, you know. Look at all the zits on my face. That's so awesome. It's not there. It's usually like, oh gosh, when will this go away? How can I take care of this? How can I decrease this? The loss of hair is another example of this. Nobody really celebrates hair loss. And so we're always trying to prevent it. We're always trying to usually figure out how to get younger, stay younger, look younger, or at least look the same and not get any older. And that's a very unrealistic sense of what's really happening with our bodies. And it points to an enormous amount of ignorance that a lot of us have. So I would say that for people who think that this isn't something worthy for them to contemplate, this is just for monks and nuns, and yeah, it's not true. It's very helpful for everyone to do this, because then as we're aging and getting older and we sicken, you know, there's also contemplations on just sickness and the fact that we get sick and what that's like. Or as we age and we start to break down, it's not a surprise to us. It's not something that we're afraid of. It's not something that we're fighting against in a way. And especially it's not something that, if we have penetrated this at all, that we feel shouldn't happen. And that's the tendency, is like, why is this happening now? Why do I have arthritis? And it's too early, and I don't want to have to deal with, you know, getting a new hip or or what it might be. And the more that we prepare for this, have a reality around, a sense of reality around what it is that's happening with our bodies, then we feel right at home with the whole process. And eventually this can take us all the way to feeling comfortable with our own death. You know, we can feel comfortable with being sick. It doesn't often, when we're sick, the contemplation is, oh, this is just so annoying and I can't wait to get better. And when am I going to get, feel normal again and feel like I should feel? And rather than like, oh, right, there is illness. And this is a good contemplation. One of the things that the senior monks in Thailand often encourage practitioners around is, when you're sick, like that's not a time to not practice. You know, kind of, I'll just drop my practice and distract myself from all these negative feelings. No, like that is the time to really be paying attention and putting a lot of effort into understanding our dukkha, understanding the dukkha that is being caused by our sense of not wanting our body to change or feeling uncomfortable or pain, and just why is that? Because when usually for most people, when, I mean, unless somebody experiences a sudden death, the death process is somewhat gradual, you know, either a day or a few days or weeks or months. Of like a real severe decline in the body. And so as we, again, get used to illness and we really try to understand it and allow ourselves to experience it from a point of interest rather than disgust or fear, then it helps us in our life. It helps us get more and more accustomed, like, oh yeah, this is what dying is going to be like. And you know, for myself, it's something that monks can. I'm not a huge. For myself, I find that the sittings, the late night sittings, are very difficult for me. So I don't engage with them a lot because over time I've just had a lot of problems with the few days afterwards. But for those people who do this practice once a week, you know, that's something that I find is admirable, to see that there's usually a group of monks that. Let's sit up. Tomorrow night we'll have another Wampra, and there'll probably be at least one or two individuals staying up. And they stay up into the night till 3:30 in the morning, and many people think, oh, this is ludicrous. Why would monks do this? That doesn't make sense. You know, they're just tired and heads are nodding. And well, what's your death going to be like? You know, is that going to be pleasant? Is there not going to be nodding and discomfort, aversion, a sense of being in a lot of dis-ease. So we're, you know, as much as we can prepare ourselves for, you know, the reality of life, then that's what's so important and beneficial. In terms of what body contemplation actually is, if there are those who haven't heard about this so much, it's visualizing what the parts are of our bodies. And so there are the parts we can see, like the hair of the head, the hair of the body, skin, our nails, teeth, so that we can see all of those things. And then we think about the other parts of our body. So we can think about our, as I mentioned, the liver, or our lungs, blood vessels, the blood, the liquid that we have in our bodies, all these things. We can go through them and just bring them up visually. You know, however we find that useful, whether it's like we visualize them on like a sort of map of our body, or we do so with, you know, like, another contemplation is just they're out there in front of you. All of your hair is on a plate, you know, your eyeballs, your liver, stomach, intestines. And they're not plastinated. They're wet and smelly and sticky, and they're not very pleasant. And I was mentioning this the other day, that I remember talking about this with my sister, and she was just talking about how she went to an autopsy. She was lucky enough to go to an autopsy. I think I've held a brain in my hand. That was interesting. At the time, a friend of mine was actually able to. I missed out on that chance. I almost was able to see an autopsy in college just through one of the classes, but I unfortunately didn't stay with that class. But my sister said that she went to one, and she was I don't remember which part. She was holding the heart or something like that, and she was just saying how beautiful it was, and just how magical and incredible the experience was. And I mentioned this the other day, like, well, I didn't ask her. I should have. I would say, well, okay, like, why didn't you put it in your purse, you know, and walk around with this beautiful thing? And how about on your pillow next to you, and, you know, and keep it going, you know, bring it to breakfast and what have you, you know. It's not gonna have that sense of beauty. In fact, it's gonna start rotting and smelling, and the whole process will be there, the reality of it. So if we're paying attention in a particular way, then we can see anything as beautiful. But if we're seeing the reality of it, it might be something that's interesting, but it's not beautiful. The parts of our bodies if we pay attention to them in the right way, we'll see that actually they're not very beautiful. They have the sense of falling apart and changing, and then once more they actually don't appeal to us so much. You know, as I said, they're wet and sticky and smelly, and if you probably put them in your mouth, they wouldn't taste very good. And then if we kind of, for most people, visualizing them, it's not a very nice thing. Like, a lot of people would be squeamish. You think about, like, somebody taking a knife and opening up your body. That's not a very pleasant image. And then spreading your, you know, your rib cage open, and you're there watching this. This would be a horrible thing to see. But for one who has really contemplated a lot, I think that if there was some sort of way that would happen, let's say you were able to stay awake through your own surgery, your own heart surgery, you might find that incredibly fascinating and not actually horrible. So I remember in one way, one of our teachers, this is more about pain, but he had a root canal, Lumbar Sumedho, and it was a two-day root canal, I believe. And so he talked to the dental surgeon beforehand, and he said, yeah, I want to do this without any painkillers. And I said, what? I'm not going to let you do that. Oh, that's how I want to do it. And so I think probably the dentist worked out, well, okay, I'll let you do it, but as soon as I decide, you know, or you tell me that you've had enough, we'll whatever. I don't know if it was a general or local anesthesia, but, well, he went and he didn't have any painkillers, and it was extremely painful, but he just used that to contemplate pain, you know, to really be with that experience. It was a sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And he said that the next day, when he was going back and he was going to do the same thing, it was like fighting his own body. It was just like there was this, he said, a palpable experience of just his in his whole body of like, really, like, I'm not going, I don't want to do this, I can't do this, and just like fighting his way to the dentist. So in the same way, you know, we have a potential to really try to observe this with our own experiences of our own bodies. Usually the Buddha, or there's a recommendation not to do this with others, because it can be complicating. It can be complicating, especially when it's, you know, if you try to practice it on, as I suggested to my friend and his wife, you don't want to practice this usually on others at first. You have to get adept with it, with yourself, so that there's not kind of confusing emotions when it deals with other people. Especially, you know, when it's involving the particular gender of the person who you have desire for or something. So it's not recommended in that way at first. So this contemplation goes just as I said. Is, you know, you say to yourself, hair of the head, hair of the body. And some monks, as I've mentioned, some monks and nuns will, any kind of practitioners will actually have some of these objects. You know, they'll have hair, or if one is lucky enough to have a skull or something like that. Real things are hard to come by these days, like a real skeleton or skull. But still, we can imagine, we can try to use these as aids in our understanding, because you have to have some sense of an image. So also photos are helpful, to see photos of or videos of autopsies. These are very helpful, or photos of just, you know, different organs, things like that. So we can actually get an idea of what it is, what it's like. And when we imagine these, we bring them up in our contemplation, then we're understanding these are within our own body, and we imagine them not as the kind of, as I've said, like this plastinated kind of, or you know, a photo of them, but really like imagining the kind of moving quality of them, the wetness of them, the you can imagine the smell, the things that are attractive. And so this is balancing for us. I remember that I gave a similar talk about this years ago, and this person had come up to me and was very upset with the talk. Said, you know, this was very harmful for me, and I think about my body a lot, and I judge myself about my body, and this was kind of very negative for me, and I understand that. I understand how that could be that way, but I think again that comes from a misperception or a misguided sense of looking at our own bodies and wanting them to be beautiful and putting a lot of value and weight on that, and then not seeing the consequence of that is what happened when I'm just describing the situation. The consequence is that was disturbing. It wasn't helpful for me, and that was harmful. But it's harmful because of the way that, if it is harmful, it's because of the way that we are particularly holding our bodies, and it's not truly harmful. It's we have been jostled from this misperception we have, and it is painful. Not harmful, but painful. Difficult. And so this isn't, I am bringing this up as a topic that, again, I'm not advocating just for those of us who are we're monastically inclined, but if one is truly kind of interested in the Buddhist teachings and interested in the topics and the ways that he gives us to penetrate and to understand ourselves, then this is actually something that is very helpful to bring up. It's really useful because all of us are dying. All of us are have bodies. And all of us are getting ill at some point in our life. Illness will come to us. You know, if it hasn't, if somebody in this room hasn't experienced illness, I'd be surprised by that, but it's possible. But we will experience illness and death. And we're all from the very sense of our, you know, the moment conception occurs. You know, a sperm and an egg join, there's aging. You know, the body from that point begins to age. It has a limited number of time that it will last. And so that's something we all are brothers and sisters in. It's something that no matter how different all of us are or how much we dislike a particular person or like another person, we're all in the same boat together. You know, every one of us shares this, so we're very much related in this way, and so we can have compassion for each other, and we can know that, like, oh, it's not just us who's afraid of death or who has to deal with illness and difficulty and the body doing what it does. It's every single one of us. Every one of us has this within our experience. And so as we contemplate, as we go through and examine our bodies, then we get used to that experience. And what is the result of that? That kind of getting used to the sense of what is unbeautiful underneath our skin. It's dispassion. We no longer feel that we're sort of chasing after sensuality as much. We're wanting to get something. We're feeling that that is the most important thing. So we have a sense of dispassion, and what comes with dispassion and the feeling that dispassion brings is actual peace, you know, real, like deep peace. So if our minds are more turning towards disgust and aversion, that's not it. That's not actually correct. So we have to figure out that we're probably going in the wrong direction. The emotion that we want to more feel is a sense of a lacking of that kind of excitedness and passion and getting and looking for the next thing and being excited about our body or other people's bodies. And that's for anybody who's experienced that just a little bit of that effect, it's incredibly special, and it can really bring a lot of faith in terms of confidence, a sense of confidence in the Buddha's teachings, and also a sense of why this is so important. How dispassion can actually allow us to see clearly. As I was talking in tea time, it was like having that snow globe, and then when we experience dispassion, that snow globe, it's not being shaken up anymore. All the snow is kind of settling, and we feel very clear, and then we can discern more. We can understand, because our mind isn't given to so much ignorance, you know, so much of a sense of being confused and agitated through our own passion, our own desires. So this is something that anyone can really add to their practice, or some of the monastics here actually do this as their primary object. They focus on this, and just going through these parts, just imagining them, going through this, the parts of your body, and imagining them and contemplating them, and you know, asking yourself, is there something permanent there? You know, is there any me in any of these things? Where's the me in the liver or the brain? You know, which part of the brain has me in it? So it's a very, you know, it's just a very useful contemplation. We can just bring these parts of our bodies to mind. And traditionally, it's called 32 parts of the body. In my own contemplations, I think I have it more as like the 50 parts. I include like the eyeballs. I find that it's helpful to actually bring some of the other organs up into my consciousness that are not just the traditional ones. Just imagining my eyeballs, you know, in my hands with the muscles that are attached to them that have been cut off and the blood vessels, the squishiness of them, the wetness. They're not attractive at all. And they're not even desirable. And yet people make a lot of fuss about eyes and eye color, and I could just lose myself in her eyes. Sadly, it's true. But that's the ignorance that occurs. That's that snow globe being shook up. And we lose all sight of ourselves, you know, when passion is created like that. We're not seeing clearly. We can't even see the person. You know, we're just looking at an eye color. So this is a way towards. It's something that I think is of paramount importance in our practice, and I just want to encourage it for everyone in some way to contemplate it. it's funny in the Visuddhimagga, there's descriptions about how to like really go for these practices, and one of them is like, I can't remember all of it. The monk like gets up and he like looks at the dirtiness of the floor. This is for a monk who's has desire as his main kind of object in terms of like his main problem, his go-to kind of greed, hatred, and delusion. It's not hatred or delusion, it's greed. He's just kind of a greedy monk. So the recommendation is just a suba all the time. So you get up and you look at how dirty your floor is or your sleeping area is, and you focus on that. And before you leave, you see the floorboard before you exit and how that's falling apart and it's dirty. And then or whatever. If it's not dirty, it's like everything's falling apart. Everything you walk on, everywhere you step. Pretty high level. But one would have to also, I recommend, balance that, because if it's getting too negative, if the mind is turning towards aversion, disgust, anger, then that's not the actual emotion we want to generate. There should be a sense of non-desire, dispassion, which is actually quite pleasant. So with this practice, we can do it in many ways, and so this talk is mostly focusing on an encouragement to investigate this, see if it's helpful or useful in any way, and give it a try. Give it a try either as just an adjunct part of one's meditation practice, or actually the main focus. And it can just be something that like we just bring up as a contemplation whenever we remember. That's what mindfulness is. Just keeping something that's skillful in mind. So you're like tapping away on the computer, and then you look down and you say, oh wow, look at that. I haven't cut my nails in a while. It's got a lot of dirt under those nails. If you put that dirt under a microscope, there's actually worms in there. So people paint their nails, make them look very beautiful, and yet there's worms underneath. This is reality. This is the reality. We can have a greater sense of like what's real for us, rather than a painted picture. You think about like really like it's kind of crazy. How much we beautify in our own experience just everything about what we do. I mean, all of us go to the bathroom. All of us go to the toilet. And we all know what we do in there. It's just not beautiful. It's not. And you don't usually see advertisements about it. You don't usually see things. They'll show maybe a toilet in an advertisement, but not a person on it. It's looking sleek and all new. But they don't show the excrement. Why not? Doesn't sell. So when we kind of start to think about these things, it's almost humorous. You really think about how much the world is painted with our beauty, our sense of beauty, our perception of beauty, and we just create that more and more, and we try to get new things and better things and clean things, and it's always, this beauty is just something that we're obsessed with. But when we really check it with reality, then it's like waking up. It's kind of like waking up from the Matrix, it's like unbelievable how we've miscolored the world, how we've misshapen the world with our own perception of desire, and created this beautiful fantasy that doesn't exist. So this isn't, again, this isn't a negative quality we're bringing up. This is something that is very helpful to us, and it's there to balance our misperception, balance that we have such a very, we're just way overloaded with this misdirection, misperception, delusion of how we see the world, how we see others, how we see ourselves. So yeah, if this is useful for you, then please do bring it up. Just kind of get up off your seat and forget about the talk. There's probably something that's been useful there. Enjoy your asubha contemplation.